Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 40 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling Not Just Wheat Country Anymore. That does have a question mark at the end. Wheat is king in eastern Washington dryland country, there's no doubt about it, and while there have been pretenders to the throne over the years, nothing has come close to replacing the grain the Bible calls the staff of life. Yes, it's true, pulses have been a staple of higher precipitation areas of eastern Washington for 50 years, where they have served as an important rotation in areas with annual rainfall from about 16 to 24 inches annually. But they have not expanded much beyond that base until now. Winter peas have been around since I was a reporter for Capital Press, but they have only gained traction recently in areas with annual moisture from 12 to 16 inches. Direct seeding is part of the ingredient that appears to have changed the equation. From Ritzville to Odessa to Davenport and even into Douglas County, wheat farmers using the practice, also known as no-till, are becoming winter pea farmers. Tim McGreevy, CEO of the USA Dry Pea and Lentil Council, envisions a transformation of eastern Washington wheat ground in the drier areas once deemed too dry to grow pulses. I visited McGreevy at his Moscow, Idaho office, where he and a staff of nine manage marketing and research for the pulse industry's domestic and international efforts. It's an office with a history. The first portion of it was built bisecting the state lines of Washington and Idaho, a symbolic gesture in the days when the two states had a lock on the pulse industry. Not so anymore, with Montana and North Dakota commanding the majority of acreage. Not that long ago, about 80% of pulse sales were made overseas, but a lot has happened in a relatively short time. Domestic consumption is growing, especially for chickpeas, but for all kinds of protein sources at which pulses, including peas, lentils, and chickpeas, excel. The United Nations designated 2016 as the International Year of Pulses. Leveraging the connection, domestic pulse growers drew down their reserves to establish the pulse crop as a real player. In a single year, the marketing effort increased domestic consumption from under 300,000 metric tons to more than 600,000 metric tons. McGreevy believes eastern Washington's summer fallow region is not just going to be wheat country anymore.
I believe, Scott, that winter peas will transform, really, eastern Washington agriculture when they really hit their stride. And we have a very aggressive breeding program right now in Pullman that has some terrific commercial-grade winter peas that are really ready to go. And the benefit is, in those low rainfall areas, under direct seed technology where they're conserving their moisture anyway, they get those rains in the winter. And it doesn't mean that they're going to necessarily walk away from summer fallow, but it'll be like a three-year rotation. You know, they'll have winter wheat, they'll have a pulse crop that they'll raise in the wintertime, and then maybe they'll set some of their land idle for that following wheat crop the next year. That's what folks are doing right now. But it's been profitable. The yields have been terrific in these dryland areas, you know, from, you know, 10 to 12 inch rainfall. You know, what we consider a desert here on the Palouse in Moscow, where we're sitting, is, where we get, you know, between 22 and 24 inches of rain. Those areas are having yields of, you know, 2,500 pounds, 3,000 pounds an acre. Well, that is a pretty terrific yield compared to, you know, what they're getting on their winter wheat. Save for a year like this where they did pretty good. So it's comparable, and the profitability is comparable. And it's a great weed and disease break for that winter wheat and helps with their soil health and reduce their nitrogen input costs the following year. So before I retire, we will see winter peas in eastern Washington in these dryland summer fallow areas. You know, there's 1,000,004 acres of summer fallow in eastern Washington right now, and we figure that we can get at least between 600,000 to 800,000 acres of that would be good for winter pulses.
I'm a little confused. The reason that we summer fallow is to build up the moisture over a season. And now you're telling me that theoretically we can grow winter wheat followed by winter peas followed by fallow. Where's the moisture coming from?
The beauty of raising a pulse crop is that it's the lowest water use crop that you can plant on your farm. They're very low water use compared to wheat, especially peas. Now, it varies between pulses a little bit. So peas are the least water use that you can grow, followed by lentils, and then chickpeas, which is being grown out in those areas, in Davenport and Wilbur and Ritzville in that area. They'll go after the moisture a little bit more. But with weather pattern changes, we've been seeing it very successful. And, of course, they're very successfully doing this in Montana, and they don't have any more rain than they do out in Davenport. But they've successfully grown spring peas at very high yields, equal to their wheat yields, in fact, exceeding their wheat yields often, because they're very low water use crops. So I caveat this because it's important. It probably wouldn't work under a conventional, or wouldn't work as well under a conventional tillage system. But if you're in a direct seed system where you're keeping all that trash and trapping that moisture anyway, why not use some of that moisture and raise an effective pulse crop and actually put some revenue into your farming stream?
And where would these winter peas be going? And is their quality as high as spring peas?
Well, in today's market, no. The winter peas that are currently being grown are generally going into the feed channels or the forage channels. Those are the two streams. But our industry's changing rapidly. We are rapidly moving in to the ingredient market, where color and size isn't as big a factor as it once was. In fact, we have an initiative right now to actually modify our grading standards. So we're looking at what is the protein content, what is the fiber content, and testing that as you're, coming into the elevator, so they can make a determination on which ingredient stream it would be effective in. So that is changing. And so that's building. We know it's building. And right now it's it's exciting really, but it's being led by pet food. So pet food has taken this plant protein message to heart. Right, and we're feeding our pets the best. If you want to feed them the best, Scott, you feed them pulse-based foods, right? Pulse-based proteins, plant proteins. And so that's been a huge driver initially of really launching this as an ingredient. Well, the pet food people aren't quite as concerned about the color of the green pea as they are with the protein consistency of that product. And we have to, we're working on that in our varietal development programs to deliver ingredient characteristics that match what these food manufacturers are trying to achieve.
Meals made from blending of the two crops was something that was done for centuries in the past, and McGreevy believes it's where the future lies again today. Please bear in mind our conversation has been edited for length.
I think the most exciting part of the domestic market actually is blends with cereal grains. To get a complete vegetable protein, we are high in protein with pulses, but we lack methionine, the building block, methionine, which is prevalent in wheat and other cereal grains. Wheat lacks lysine. Well, in pulse crops, we're high in lysine. So you put those two together and blend these two together, which has actually happened for a millennia, right? That you've had rice and beans, or rice and lentils, or you've had bread and a pulse crop, and so when you combine them together, it's a complete vegetable protein and rivals that of any meat product. So I see actually the future of being blends, and so if you think of this message. I know my friends in the wheat industry are concerned about this, and you know, I'm a wheat farmer myself. I have a small farm just north of Pullman, and I raise wheat and barley and raise canola this year and pulse crops. And it's really important to have a crop rotation and a cropping system that works, you know, in your farm. But think of this matrix right now. We've seen a decline in wheat consumption in the United States as this gluten-free issue has come on board, the Atkins diet, you know, where they want more protein. And I really think that the future in developing new products to increase wheat consumption is through blends, to blend pulses with wheat to increase their protein content and their fiber content and give these cereal grains and pulse crops a whole new look and our consumers a whole new message of how they want to approach and consume these crops, because they're terrific, you know, and I think that we can add more protein. We can add more dietary fiber, which we need in our diet for sure, to address some of our health issues here in the United States.
Whatever happened to aspicata blight? Am I pronouncing that right? It was a disease which devastated the industry when the industry first started in this area. Do we have bulletproof varieties now?
Well, they're not bulletproof, but we've had some better management practices, and certainly the Virata Development Program at Washington State University, led by the Ag Research Service, has, you know, provided us some resistant varieties that have been very successful in our growing conditions. In the early 80s, when chickpeas were really introduced to this region, they were varieties out of California and out of Mexico, and they got up to this climate, and they were very susceptible to aspicata blight, to the point where we actually had moratoriums of chickpea acreage grown here in the mid to late 80s. Dr. Fred Mielbauer, who is a legend in the pulse industry, he and Walt Kaiser, a plant pathologist and ARS plant pathologist at Washington State University, traveled the globe into the Middle East and found some resistant strains to aspicata blight, brought that back to here at Pullman, Washington and this region, and developed some terrifically resistant varieties to aspicata blight. We've also seen a little bit of change in the weather pattern too, to be honest, and management practice. So we're noting that our plant pathologist, Dr. Wadan Chen at USDA ARS in Pullman, has said that, you know, if you plant chickpeas a little bit later in the season when the soil temperatures are a little warmer and there's not as much splashing early on those plants, it'll actually reduce your aspicata blight incidence. And so, you know, for the past several years, actually, aspicata blight has not been a major factor here in the Pacific Northwest.
I've heard people joke about chickpeas replacing wheat as the cash crop here in the Northwest. What do the economics look like?
Well, the economics are fairly stark currently with current pricing, especially if you're talking the spring wheats or spring barley. So, you know, for a chickpea crop, you can net currently, and these are rather conservative prices using like 32 cents to the grower. Right now, they're 38 cents, average yield of, you know, 1,500 pounds. Now, you can net over $300 an acre. So if you have, you know, hard red spring wheat that does super good and prices are $650 or above, you can net, you know, in the low 200s or sub 200s. So chickpeas in particular, lentils also have performed very well, not quite as well as chickpeas, but, you know, they'll average over $200 an acre net to the grower. And that's been pretty attractive. So take last year where we had terrific yields for our chickpeas in the 2,000-pound range, and we had, you know, net to the grower over $500-$600 an acre with some of the pricing that we had. That actually exceeded, you know, winter wheat by a significant amount last year. So, you know, wheat is not going anywhere in the Pacific Northwest, no doubt about that. But chickpeas are certainly a huge cash crop that has certainly exceeded most other spring crops in terms of revenue back to the grower here in the past, really the past 5 to 6 years, even 10 years. Well, the prices actually have been very strong for all pulse crops, save, you could say, dry peas, which haven't benefited as much from the demand as chickpeas and lentils. But really, Scott, it's really driven by demand. And in the case of chickpeas in particular, it's driven by domestic demand. And, you know, we've been part of that. You know, we made an investment as an organization to really bump up our domestic marketing presence in 2004. And we virtually didn't have much of a domestic marketing program at all prior to that time because prices were low, we had low income and all that. But we started to increase income. My board members who were very progressive and looked down the road a little bit said, look, we're seeing this increased acreage in Montana and North Dakota. How are we going to mitigate that? And they made some big investments in domestic marketing that have really paid off. So doing technical seminars, training people with the goal of trying to increase the use of peas, lentils, and chickpeas as an ingredient has really paid very big dividends for the industry in terms of increased demand and keeping prices quite high. To answer your question, today a farmer can sell his large chickpeas for about 38 cents a pound. Supply's a little bit tight, and we could see even more strength in those chickpea prices as the season goes along.
And the small-seeded chickpeas, which apparently go in hummus?
Well, the small-seeded chickpeas have ranged between 25 and 30 cents, which is still a very strong price because they generally yield a little bit better. The majority of the chickpeas produced in the United States are heading here domestically. Our second biggest market internationally actually is Spain. Spain takes our large chickpeas. Mostly they take some small chickpeas. India is a big player in our markets. Believe it or not, Canada is also a big player. Canada mostly to bump up their quality of some of the chickpeas that they grow. So Italy, Israel, Peru, Turkey, we established a huge market in Turkey for roasted chickpeas. And so, interestingly enough, that's a very popular snack in Turkey and all over the Middle East, and a growing snack here in the United States. You can go to most stores now and find roasted chickpeas, and I encourage your audience to do so.
As I drive around Eastern Washington, I'm looking at pulse crops, and I'm seeing lots of weeds. What's going on?
Weeds, definitely. I'm sure any grower that you talk to in my coalition would say, yeah, weeds is my number one problem with pulse crops, and continues to be something that we strive to achieve and how we deal with it. You know, we have grassy weed problems just like the weed industry does, and so you have this product, you know, Zidua, for an example, that has been great on grassy weeds. Well, it works for pulses too, but if you apply it year after year after year, then you get resistant Italian ryegrass and you know, you lose that chemistry until something else comes along.
We all know about the technology we refer to as GMOs. There's also the CRISPR-Cas9 technology that is just now coming out. Are you working with any of these new technologies in the pulse industry?
Well, I'd say we're working with them, yes. Are we interested in releasing them? No. Our marketplace right now has been very clear, both domestically and internationally, that they are not ready for GMO or modified technologies. And so it has been an advantage, actually, for our industry to be a non-GMO, certainly domestically right now. Are we opposed to the technology? Absolutely not. But we certainly see the benefits of it. And I'll tell you, my growers would love an option to control their weeds with a product that would actually kill everything. But right now, the consumers are just, you know, in consumer survey after consumer survey, they said, no, it would really harm our domestic market and international market at this time.
You and I have both been around long enough to see several cycles in agriculture, the highs and the lows. Right now, we're in a high for the pulse industry, it seems to me. Are we at the edge of a precipice looking for a fall?
Well, you know, I've been at it long enough, just like you have, to know that there's always a fall. You know, agriculture is built on falls and rises. And certainly the pulse industry will have its fall, I'm sure, if we totally outstrip our demand by increasing, you know, these acreages. But the beauty is, in my career, and I'm an ag econ major, got a master's in ag econ from Washington State University, and you know, my, you know, professors, Des O'Rourke and Gail Willett and all these great professors told me, hey, you know, you increase your production, you know, by 25%, you're going to see an effect on your prices. Well, the truth is, we have threefold increase in our production and our prices have gone up. And so nothing against Dr. O'Rourke or Dr. Willett, but if you have the demand, and we have been successful in our promotions as an industry, and we've had the food trends start coming our way, we have a lot of room to grow. So I don't think we're done yet in terms of increasing that demand. We will see more production because these crops are very profitable to farmers, not only here, but we're seeing a lot more competition from the Ukraine, which, you know, the wheat industry has dealt with for years and years, and they're starting to grow more pulse crops. And so, yeah, could we really exceed the demand? Yes, we could, and we could see a back off of prices. But the truth is, with the population trends, with our own domestic marketing, our own domestic efforts here in North America getting a lot more health conscious, and the trend towards plant-based proteins and more fiber in your diet, we have a lot of room to grow, and I think our prices can remain strong for the next 5 years.
Does the wheat industry need to be worried?
No, I don't think the wheat industry needs to be worried. We need to be partners because as a wheat producer, I'm concerned that there's been a lot of negative press on wheat. I think unfairly in many cases. I'm concerned that we need to reach out as wheat producers and partner to create new foods that the consumers want. And it's not about competition for me. It's about collaboration and cooperation, and I hope we can increase that in the next 5 years.
It was great to see McGreevy again to appreciate his mix of professionalism, knowledge, and good humor. He's seen a lot of changes in the 23 years he served as the nation's main pulse person. Certainly, there's no doubt peas, lentils, chickpeas, and beans are on a roll right now, what with millennials interested in eating well with less impact to the planet. But there's a reason wheat is and has remained king of the crops since the land was broken out in the 1880s. I wish farmers growing winter peas well because of the same farmers that grow wheat. Although it's possible to grow wheat without a rotational crop, it's a lot easier from a soil health and chemistry perspective to rotate out of grasses into legumes. On top of the potential to receive a good price, the plants also fix nitrogen in the soil, cutting fertilizer costs. Of course, they have to perform, and so far so good, but I've seen Mother Nature shatter good intentions with an Arctic Express. In that respect, I hope McGreevy's right that the climate has changed. That's it for episode 40 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling Not Just Wheat Country Anymore? About my conversation with Tim McGreevy, CEO of the U.S. Dry Pea and Lentil Council, and head of many other organizations too numerous to name. Hope you enjoyed the show and will join me again next time for another episode of Wheat All About It!
Grass is fine if you've got a cut or 4 feet and stand in the mud, but we've got two and teeth to chew. Don't give us none of that vegetarian stew. We're carnivores and we ain't ashamed. The reason's simple, it's in the refrain. We feed you.